Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby makes it hot. Buy the cop till you hit the spot. Tell my baby makes it hot.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee.
And I'm here. My partners are not, but here I am, Professor Val, joining you on this 4th of July celebration. And we're doing our show a little bit early today so that everybody can go out and enjoy fireworks. Unfortunately, it's raining, but that's par for the course. What are you going to do? So on our blog this week, Dr. Mark did a very interesting blog entry on eco-vacation, and it's Eco Week. Let me bring up the blog here. Let's see. For anybody out there, it's www.nakedsoma.blogspot.com, and you can read about our eco-vacation. Is that my eco-pal out there?
I have arrived!
Oh, you are.
Oh, my God!
You're the best.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing at everything else, but what you're talking about. But boy, I missed the opening and everything.
You did. You didn't get a chance to dance. But just telling everybody that we were going to talk about eco vacation, and I just gave them the blog spot address so that they can go over and take a look. And that's where we're at.
Yeah, folks. I was winging my eco way across the Cross County Expressway at 5:47, having told everyone around me that 6 o'clock there was a radio show, which I was surrounded by Antos, and you got time.
Uh-huh.
And I got here pretty much at 5:59, and then I dropped my keys outside the door, and I was a minute late, but it was a fun ride over, I'll tell you that. It's like a hydroplane over here.
Two wheels?
Well, I passed an SUV on the side street here on Fifth Avenue in New Rochelle, which is sort of a drag strip of potholes and the sort of the underbelly of the town.
Yeah.
And a couple times there, I thought I saw some, you know, like the scene from The Wicked Witch of the, you know, when things are going by, like monkeys and stuff.
Oh, did you see any monkeys?
I was going. A couple of stray dogs that had to die for the curb.
Oh, yeah. Well, that happened.
You know.
Did your festivities get rained out today?
No, this morning it was fine. We went to the Larchmont races here in town, and my daughter, as usual, you know, she won a race, but there was a dispute, and she ended up getting tied for second. And a couple times, a three-legged race, she came in third. Or no, she came in second in that one. Two boys elbowed her, passed away.
Oh, my.
With her friend Naya. Yeah, and then they jumped across the finish line first, and then Sarah pounced them.
Way to go, Sarah.
And that is the last time they will be racing her
mm-hmm.
in that fashion.
I can only imagine.
She's got, you know, one thing about Antos, when you race them, it doesn't matter about winning or losing as much. The rules matter a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So if you win, you have to win according to the rules, otherwise it doesn't count. So she made them admit that they cheated with a rolled up T-shirt to the chest.
I see. Did that make her feel better?
Yeah, she wouldn't get the ribbon, but she knew that they had cheated.
Okay, well,
that's all that
matters. Cheaters suck.
Yeah, well, those kids are walking around the rest of the morning with their eyes in the back of their head.
Mm-hmm.
And my son, of course, he enjoyed the festivities, especially when the fire trucks spray the water up in the air. The kids run underneath. It's kind of cold out today for that, and he decided that once he was back at the blanket to disrobe completely, and we had to tackle him.
As you predicted.
Predicted. It's like you could just check it off. It's like it's part of the the itinerary every year. And now the annual running of the boy. You know.
So. Just like his father. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Somehow that behavior didn't emerge in me until I was in college, but whatever.
Yeah, well,
so here we are
up
here
in
Naked Soma Space Land. What?
He got an early start, that's all.
Yeah, well, on a lot of levels. I guess I'm rebooting as we speak. My computer's having an epileptic fit, so I'm rebooting.
Did you want me to play
play the theme song again. I got to get to the mood here. I'm coming out of the rain. It's like, you know, it's nasty out there.
All right. Let me get it. Hold on. I'm getting to the right screen.
When did you get back?
Oh, not that long ago. We had to fly down from Dutchess County, where we had a lovely, you know, visit with my parents, and we had steak, which always makes me happy.
Mm.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I had Bubba Burgers. I was pleased.
Yeah, you were looking forward to the Bubba Burgers.
Yeah, unfortunately, I had to eat them in like 5 minutes and then run to the rehab center to my mom. Yeah, well, it was off the course. See that dude that ate the 66 hot dogs today?
No.
Yeah, Joey Chestnut.
Oh,
he beat that Japanese dude who ate like 63. The new world record.
Did he dip it in the water? Because that really makes me nauseous.
No, they ate it with the hot dogs and the buns. They were just shoving them right in their mouths.
Okay, here's the theme. Ready?
Okay, yeah, let's dance.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo.
Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Ah, that's good stuff.
Yeah. And in honor of my son, there you go, the Get Naked theme song. I seem to think that's a, that if he played that on the hour, he probably would do that on the hour.
Probably,
yeah. Wow. So we're sort of spinning the dial here. We're a little early today so people can enjoy the fireworks and, looks like it's going to be a washout here in Mamaroneck. They're talking about tornadoes.
Tornadoes in New Jersey.
Yeah, hail and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And lightning, like a big lightning show.
Great.
So hopefully we'll be long off the air so we don't get zapped dead.
Oh, brother.
Eco's had that happen to them a lot, by the way.
Oh,
if you open any of those Darwin Award books, it's page after page of Eco's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who thought they could climb a fence or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this. Computer's freaking out.
So are you at the new office now? Are you home? Or?
I am at the new and improved and clearing out and getting organized Soma space.
You know, we should really do a live show from there and have a guest audience.
That'd be nice. Yeah,
I think we should do that. Yeah.
I'm all for that.
Yeah. Yeah, we could have a little party.
We got to clear some of the boxes out of the way before that, but sure.
Yeah, well, we're getting there. It didn't look too bad when I left the other night. Wasn't too bad. It's getting there.
It's you know, day by day. I mean, tomorrow actually I'm going to be with clients, as it were, down here, so it'll be a little more, it's going to start cleaning up a little more. But one thing about this office that's, that I like anyway, getting used to it, is that the rest of the building is so uniform and so kind of like quiet that you almost feel like compelled to clean things up. Where my old office at 1890 was sort of like a barn.
Yeah, you're right.
It didn't have that feel.
No, it wasn't my favorite place.
Well, I mean, I you know, you're there 7 years, you kind of you know the works, but it just had that that aura to it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
There is something evil in the computer today.
Yeah, I just saw you pop on, so.
Well, it's not happening here, so I'm just going to wait.
No, huh? Oh, brother.
It's moody.
Maybe your computer needs a vacation.
I think the computer is entering into dementia. If you follow the show at all, my computer problems are pretty much running neck and neck with my colon issues. and this sort of sets it up. Everything about being aware of the environment, which is the side of the wave we're going to be talking about today, which is what ecos are oriented to, is that it's one thing to notice it. It's another thing to identify it. And it's a third thing to actually think foolishly that you can change it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the world's a big place, and that's what ecos are pretty much reminded of every day and humbled by. in a certain sense. I guarantee the first guy that spread a computer virus was an eco. I wonder what this email was, you know. Oh, yeah, I guarantee. Because it's sort of like the way the juggling act goes, and we do this every week. We start talking on shorthand without telling people what we're saying. Is that you got four ways of interacting with your surroundings, okay? The first way is to bond with it. That's the philo way, the philosomatic, philo meaning species. I walk in a room and I sort for the people that are of my species, right? And if I walked into the Bronx Zoo here, there's animals, there's birds, and there's people. I'm going to sort for the people. That's my tribe, right? And then the next step is to say, screw the surroundings. It's all about me. That's ontosomatic, and that's the second orientation we take, usually terrible twos, that kind of thing. And this week we're talking about the ecosomatic way, which is to ignore both self and other and just tune into the vibe, the surroundings, the atmosphere, and to get into the emotional content of what's going on. And that one is the trickiest one to sort of kind of put a fork in, because can you talk about anger without talking about the feelings you have for it? Or you know, so the internal environment is just as relevant as the external environment. So when people think about surroundings, usually their first inkling is outside. When they think about environment, they think about outside. But there's also an internal environment that most people don't really have a grip on, because they're not oriented that way, because, what, 11% of the population internalizes that way of relating to things as an ego developmentally. So it's not a common orientation. It's actually sort of a mutant one,
mm-hmm.
if you ask me. And that's why it's one of the ones, when we get into it, it's so under-emphasized in the culture, because it's all about letting go, releasing, relaxing, not competing, which is countercultural. So the eco is it's like, I always think of the movie Stripes, you know, the Bill Murray character, total eco, right? And what happens to him is that he's confronted with all this responsibility, and he's constantly coming up against brushes with authority, and ecos are always in trouble, because not only do they not follow the rules, they go out of their way to break them, because conforming to them is sort of like death. And that's one of the reasons why when you get into this part of the summer is an onto season. The summer is all capital S. It's all the growing season for farmers. It's the peak of effort. It's the peak of pushing out your energy. And ecos are not about that. Ecos are about releasing and relaxing, letting go of the balloon. Watch the balloon go to the sky. and you know, oh, there it goes again. And every time, it's funny, because you're at an amusement park and you see a bunch of helium balloons in the sky, and you go, eco. Because that's what we do. We're the ones that are going to lose our keys, at the airport or something like that. It's like, it's that forgetfulness, it's that kind of absent-mindedness, because we have a very loose grip on what we call the waking state, which is segues into the blog this week, where I found a pretty good montage there.
Yeah, that was good.
Of ecos, we don't have good, clear boundaries between what's happening right now when we're awake and what happens when we're asleep.
Yeah, no kidding.
The dream state sort of follows you everywhere as an eco, because it's all soupy. You know, you could think about any emotional experience you have. It distorts time. It distorts your sense of personal space. You know, you get angry, so suddenly you get very sensitive to someone getting close to you. A lot of the work I've done with common eye disorders, like nearsightedness and farsightedness, they are embodiments of those imbalances, and you get socially oriented towards having less or more of a bubble around you.
Mm-hmm.
Angry people tend to have a broader bubble. Someone gets within 4 feet of them, they start getting a little bit tight. And eco tends to thrive when people are between 4 and 12 feet away, because it's close enough to have a handshake at 4 feet, but it's far enough away at 12 feet to pick up their heartbeats and pick up their emotions. And sometimes ecos are a little too open to the stuff that the other person is not really intending to share, and we pick up on things that are not expressed, that is sort of subtle, and then we speak to them, and then we get in trouble. You know,
that's true.
Why are you angry? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you upset? You're afraid of something? And the other person's not even aware of it. We just kind of smell it, sniff it, wear it, and we pick it up. We pick up on it, and we respond to that that expression from other people, because, again, we're oriented toward the surroundings, whether it's surrounding us or somebody else. and then we'll go one step down and say refer to ourselves or refer to the other person to complete the philo onto eco arc. And then what happens is that whole thing reverberates, and the fourth orientation, one we didn't talk about a minute ago, is exo, which is the one that makes a system out of it and makes a utility out of it and makes it so that you can go back and speed dial that thing. So the exo is not invested in the content, it's invested in organizing the information, and so that thing is able to be accessed again. It's almost like you go on your computer and you didn't have, you know, files and folders and documents. You just had a bunch of stuff. You never find it. The exo's job is to take all that information and give it organization. What are you playing in there?
My mother just messaged me.
Oh.
She said we had fun today, and I said it was nice to see them because I haven't seen them in a week, and she asked me if they got taller.
What's that mean?
You know, like when you see a kid and then you don't see them for a while and they get so...
Oh.
You got so tall, you know.
Going out of her way to confuse me. Well, if you're aware of it, give the phone number for folks to call because I'm still getting over there.
Yeah, I can. Let me see. Hold on.
I usually have it written in front of me, but I don't understand.
All right. Wait a
minute. Early show and all.
Just have to pop onto the profile here. All right. Listener dial-in number is 646-478-4847. So you guys should call us and entertain us. Because we entertain you, and I think it's payback.
Well, something. We haven't had a call in, like, you know, 3 or 4 shows now because we've been doing different things. But you know, we want to start getting that conversation going a little more with you guys because we feel like this stuff is much more powerful and much more interesting when you're able to use the language and understand what we're talking about from experience, not just from, you know, listening to us. So let's see if... eventually this thing gets over there. Computer's not going to cooperate, I don't think, for most of the show, but we'll see. I don't know. Since you put that router in, it's been a little sluggish.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that it's the router.
No, it's the PC hasn't the flexibility of, you know, an old man. But it just seems like it's been a little under the weather for 2 days. I couldn't even send emails out last night, so.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah, it has nothing to do with the router.
So what we can do, since I can't get to the blog, is just I want to just go over a couple of things about this eco-vacation concept, because most things that you're dealing with in life have to do with plans you made upstream that now have gone foobar.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have a backup plan. And there's a little word in negotiation dynamics called BATNA. Have you heard that stupid word? It's an acronym.
Doesn't ring a bell.
The BATNA. And the BATNA is something that I learned about the hard way because I didn't know it existed until I figured out that's exactly what I was going for. Because ECOs have incredible BATNAs. And the BATNA stands for the best available, the best alternative to a negotiated agreement. That's a BATNA.
Mm.
All right? So what happens is that the ECO expects and even sort of seems to encourage resistance from others. Again, sensitive to the surroundings, they're tuning into more of the noise, more of the raw stuff, more of the unexpressed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're putting up obstacles to what would be a negotiated agreement. And so they understand it is not going to be a straight bip. Most people in the onto world are very digital. It's, I said this, I get that, if then. The philos live in expectation. You said we'd have this by now. I was expecting it at 6 o'clock, you know. And the eco is... in the real world where there's not so many social contracts written. It's more of a biological world, so it runs by rules that we don't have really a lot of influence over. So the eco works the BATNA, right? And so they're constantly, it seems, negotiating to an alternative because they can't get to the thing that they intended directly. And so a vacation, by definition, is to empty, right? So what happens is most people are trying to fill up their lives with all these experiences, and acquire stuff and gather stuff and sort of bring things in. And the eco is sort of trying to let things go because our focus is on the downside of the wave, the part that's called the beginning of recovery so that you can go further the next time. So if you're looking at like a swinging pendulum, the eco is focusing on the backswing. He's not focusing on when you go forward. He's focusing on when you go back within. So it's funny. We're focused on the surroundings on the one hand, but we're tuned into the internal environment, the kickback, the subtle stuff, the subtext on the inside. And that makes for a lot of weird ways of expressing yourself, because you're sort of on two lines at the same time. And that type of attention, when it's really clear and really coherent, you get a lot of congruency. People believe you. You become what they call authentic. That's one of the things that people look for in politicians, is that eco-signature of authenticity, is that what they say about themselves on the outside, they are on the inside. We don't find out later that there's something else, you know. Same token, when eco was, you know, we're from the dark side. The Philos and the Ontos are on the light side. They're all on the growing and building stage, and then Eco and Exo are on the downside, the dark side, which is recovery, death and dying, things like that. So like now, this time of night, from 6 o'clock to midnight, this is the downside or the beginning of the dark cycle from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. where we go through recovery. So the Eco is all about dusk, and the Exo is all about night.
Uh-huh.
And then the Philo deals with the dawn, and then the Eco, the Onto deals with the day. So when you follow things through these steps, through these loops, you start realizing if that's your default orientation, or what we call your primary domain, it isn't your personality that's running that stuff. It's your biological root. It's the way that you came to be best expressed in the world developmentally when you were just building a brain. So it wasn't like you just decided it. Like, you could decide to be shy or decide to be extroverted in any environment, and to whatever degree and extent you're successful, you build up skills. This is different. This is like what was there to work with in the beginning. And, you know, you gave a lecture the other day about temperament. Maybe you can make a kind of a traditional distinction here for people, because I think we were at that point. If you were going to make a distinction between someone's temperament and someone's personality, what would you tell them?
All right. You are born with a temperament. It's, you know, how easily you're soothed, for example, as a baby, and how you respond to your environment.
Okay.
So once you have your temperament and you're in the world, you're interacting with your environment. Your interactions with your environment will then shape your personality.
Okay.
Yeah, and then your personality.
So again, personality is a result. People think personality is a cause, and that distinction would make personality the result of how you apply the temperament, what you were given with the environmental interactions.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
It's a little nature-nurture thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. And the funny part about, you know, the somatic stuff we're talking about here is that it's also on that cusp between what's biologically granted to you developmentally and what you socially develop as a result. Because you develop signatures in all four of these different domains, all four of these different ways of reading your experiences, right? But the one that has the most emphasis, or the one that you tune into and identify as you, is the primary one, and you didn't get to pick that one. It picked you based on your experiences the first 4 years of your life. So it's funny. It's almost like you get your seat in the movie theater. Everyone has a ticket, the same movie on the screen, but your orientation is fixed in the seat that you're in. Did you choose the seat, or did it choose you? No, it was self-organized by when you got into the theater, when you went through the experience of trying to find the seat, and it takes you 4 years to find that seat biologically. Boom, that's your seat in the movie theater. That's your primary domain. That's where you're going to feel most comfortable, most familiar, and most coherent on any basis, in any environment. And then it starts to migrate. It starts to morph, because you can actively and passively leave that spot, and I've done that sometimes in movies, change my seat.
Mm-hmm.
You're always comfortable in the one that you were in first, in terms of the way that you orient yourself. And that's one of the things with personality. I always see this. It's like, okay, let's make the shy person assertive. Let's make the assertive person more. It seems to be everyone wants to push everybody to the middle, instead of saying, here's your terrain. You know, you got all these strengths and weaknesses. Let's, instead of focusing on trying to support, you know, or actually protect you from all your weak spots, why not support your strengths? Why not take the things, the attributes you have? If you take someone's temperament and say that they're, they're more of a melancholic type of temperament, okay? So they're prone to sadness. They're prone to the drama, melodrama. what's the strengths and weaknesses of that temperament, and then what kind of personality develops out of that. And if you have someone who's introverted and melancholic, that's a damn downer kind of person, right? And then we put them in the exo domain, they're not even going to express it. So you're not even, they're not even going to have the capacity to put that information or that orientation out on the surface. It's not going to be something they're going to display. They're not going to tune in. Why? Because they're not oriented towards people that much. They don't need to bond. They already have a system, and it works for them. So what disrupts them isn't what happens to them. It's what happens to other people that are connected to them. That's why it doesn't stop at your skin. Somatics does not stop at your skin. It's your whole world. Your skin just happens to be a receptor for it. It happens to be sort of like the icon for it that double-clicks you into the inner world. But it's just another boundary. And like we've said, ecos don't really have solid boundaries. It's all dashed lines because they're working that BATNA.
So does temperament also affect your domain?
See, this is why I got to know more about what defines temperament psychologically. Because if you're saying you're born with it, are you born with a bias or you're born with a whole temperament? Does it come out like a zip file? Like, here you are. Like, give me an example of what a temperament is. I know that Kinsey whatever scale, but
There's a Carey temperament scale. Carey,
yeah, that's the guy.
Yeah, one of those guys. They're all the same. Everybody comes up with their own BS. Let me think. How can I explain it? All right, so babies are born with, you know, physical characteristics. We know skin tone, physique, hair color, and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel that they're also born with this pattern of behavior, which is called temperament, which is part of their own, you know, unique makeup. So if I were to go, let me try this. Okay. In psychology, this is from Wikipedia. I don't know how accurate this one is, but let's see. Temperament is the innate aspect of an individual's personality. Okay, well, it's not personality, so it's freaking wrong. Let me see what else we have here. Temperament is defined as that part of the personality which is genetically based. All right, it is genetically based, but it's pre-personality. Along with character and those aspects acquired through learning, the two together are said to constitute personality. That I'll buy. They have to be careful how they word these things.
Well, say that part again, because that sounds like psychobabble.
Okay.
I got to hear that.
Along with character and those aspects acquired through learning, the two together are said to constitute personality. In other words,
so what the heck's character?
The genetics. The
character's
genetics.
Genetic.
No, the genetics and your character. The genetics they're saying is the character, and then the learning, which would be the interaction with the environment.
And that's temperament, the second part? So
the
temperament
them,
has to do with...
The two
what,
of them together
oh.
will
oh,
then
okay,
go
so.
Into personality. So the first thing you're born with is your temperament, which is genetically based. And
your
then,
temperament
is...
Oh.
Yeah, and then once you start interacting with your environment, then the genetics plus your interaction with your environment becomes your personality.
So if I'm taking the biology out of it, I'm trying to get this equation down because the psychology is to me, it's the third floor here. You're saying you're born with a certain character, which is genetic predispositions towards some type of psychological profile. We don't even know, right?
Uh-huh.
Potential. We'll just call it potential, right? And then you have this temperament, which is more the kinetic part that's actually going to interact with the outside world and get like more on the surface. And that's also something you're born with. Temperament,
right.
Which is tendencies, I guess.
Well, you know what? Let me
more
give you
potential
this.
And tendencies. Huh?
There's nine temperament characteristics. All right. There's activity.
So what's character? Character distinct from temperament is what?
All right. Let me give you this. The nine temperament characteristics are activity level.
Okay.
Okay. Regularity, which is the level of predictability in the child's like biological functions.
Okay.
Initial reaction, like approach withdrawal stuff.
Okay.
Adaptability.
All right.
Intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Mood.
Mm-hmm.
Distractibility.
I got a lot of that.
Persistence and attention span. And
got a lot of that too.
Right. And sensitivity.
Ooh, three for
okay.
three. So there's nine. So that spectrum is all graded out on performance. You can't know that about a baby until they do it, right?
Yep.
React, all that stuff. So you have to elicit temperament.
Yeah, you're or you're going to observe it.
Well, yeah, it has to be elicited through behavior, through expression, as the kid develops, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's temperament. So then you're saying character is already on the inside, and you reveal it through the temperament.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is the combination of those two, plus the interactions with the environment, constitutes personality.
Right.
And then once
so
you have
personality
a personality,
can change.
It, personality can change how?
It develops. So
because of who you're interacting?
Right. Once
with,
you
I
have
mean, is that,
your personality,
that the X factor?
Right,
yeah.
Once you have your personality set in stone, it really doesn't change. One of the things that psychologists...
Personality doesn't change. Okay.
Right. What, but it's going to change as you're a kid, as you're growing up. If you have, for example, you have a kid who has a lot of problems, you cannot
mm-hmm.
diagnose them with a personality disorder before the age of 18. And I really think it takes longer. I think they have a little bit more time. But before age 18, they say the personality is not completely developed, so you can't say they have a personality disorder.
So what age do you actually have a full boat personality that can have a disorder?
According to the DSM, it would be 18.
Mm-hmm.
So
it takes you
18
years to really have a personality. That's actually
right.
pretty interesting because the second transition with somatics occurs in late adolescence between 17 and 25 when you're building an adult brain. So it's interesting that right at the junction of when you start actually developing a life story, you have a personality to do it with.
Right, so that makes sense. That makes sense. So what happens is, like, for example, if a kid is completely out of control and they're lying and cheating and stealing and hurting animals and all of that, we say that they have what's called conduct disorder. Now, if they're still doing those things at 18... then they've jumped ship into a sociopathic personality.
Oh, okay. So all that stuff, it started to make a little more sense to me because when they talk about anyone having a delay, which is, it seems like we're all pretty much on the short bus
mm-hmm.
in some capacity psychologically because in order to have, I mean, say you have the best temperament of all, you're all across the board in those nine attributes, and you're showing up with, you know, unbelievable flexibility and adaptability and all this stuff, and all that speaks to a high level. I mean, how is character judged? Does that have features to it, too?
Character?
What's an example of character, yeah.
I don't really know. I mean, it depends on
it sounds
how
like
you
a social thing. Yeah, exactly. Well, psychologically, character talks about, you're saying it's more potential. It's more like... What someone's bias is going to be, what they're going to be predisposed to, rather than what they actually do.
Right.
You know, it's
I
like I always think
yeah.
the whole character thing comes to me like it's like the whole scorpion with the frog,
mm-hmm.
right? He carries him across the river and he stabs him, and that's my character. It's like
right.
it's something that it's a deeper identity than even psychological. It's almost like it's constitutional actually. So it's down. That might even be miasmic. It might even be something you're born into from a bloodline, you know. So it's
possibly.
Like if you're born Serbian, you're supposed to da 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 da. You know, it's like it seems like it's got more of its roots anthropologically than it does from just psychology from the individual. It seems like you're carrying a group identity within you that sort of flowers out into your world individually, and then you say, oh, that's me over there.
Yeah. Well,
that's
the thing
in the
with the word character.
Losing my religion. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's funny that you said that word, because the word character has a moral connotation to it. You know, then you get into the psychology.
Right, right, right. What I'm saying.
It's
more the psychosocial barrier than it is down
mm-hmm.
in the biology, it seems like. And that's why it's odd that people say you're born with it. How could you be born with a social orientation? It doesn't seem... See, a lot of the maps in psychology, and you do this a lot... They're almost gospelized to the point where no one questions them. And then if you double click on them, you say, no, you got your socks in the underwear drawer. Yeah, they're in the dresser, but it doesn't seem organized to me. Within somatics as a discipline, because it isn't just one discipline in somatics, it's multidiscipline, the maps can be made to shuffle around so that you're actually describing the territory that you're observing rather than trying to make the terrain fit into the map like this seems to do.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
Rigid categories and all that.
I always tell my students when we're learning some new theory, you know, there's 5,000 theories and half of them will contradict the other half. I always tell them that psychologists have to do their dissertation, they have to do all these papers, so they're going to come up with a theory, because they have to. It's part of their education. And just because some kind of theory exists doesn't mean it's worth anything. So to take them all with a grain of salt and question the hell out of them.
And that's really, to me, that's really the only value in learning a lot of this stuff, whether it's, you can go through people that go through pre-law, people that go through pre-med, anything you're learning out there, it's the ability to have some critical thinking about it so that it doesn't become gospel or dogma.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because there's a lot of preachers out there that you know, will cut you off at the knees if you dare speak the name of another theory in the room. I just think it's funny that, you know, the Adlerites out there and the Jungians can't talk, and they're both psychologists. It's kind of dopey, but you know, it's horses for courses, and same thing happens in every other faction, politically, religious, whatever.
Yeah.
It's the nature of maps to compete. So.
Well, even like when I have my general psych students, and they don't really know too much about psychology. I mean, from whatever they've learned in high school, if they took psych or whatever, and they will almost always come in with, they'll make a face when I mention Freud. Because, you know, Freud gets this really bad rap. And yes,
right.
He said some stupid things. But, you know, if you were smoking opium all day and your father married a woman younger than your step-siblings, you'd be a little confused, too.
Yeah,
but
there was no couch for him to go to.
No, but when you remove a lot of his verbiage, when he made things sexualized, you know, like that infants have a sexuality, and you look at it more in a social way like Erickson did, it makes perfect sense. So then I have to reteach them to be more open. Just because, you know, Freud was a little wacky doesn't mean some of the stuff he said wasn't somewhat useful.
And Freud was actually a radical in a lot of senses, because he was not as abstract as some of the other psychologists, because psychologists tend, you know, psyche can't stick a fork in it. It's immaterial. It's more of the spiritual nature, really, is that he was a meat eater. He was a carnivorous psychologist. He was saying it's in the brain, it's in the body, it's rooted in drives and reflexes and, you know, bonds that are biological. He was talking some pretty radical stuff for his time that now has gone full circle, and now you got this sort of mutt going two different directions, this evolutionary psychology.
Oh yeah, and we covered that the other day in class. That's interesting.
Yeah, and then you start getting into the whole, the Darwinian aspects of behavior, which can make me crazy, but, because the new biology that's out there now, which is the part that really gets me interested from a somatic standpoint, which is extremely eco. Google this guy's name, Bruce Lipton. Anyone out there listening?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because this guy will turn you, I had an eco ride with him down a mountainside in California in the late 90s, that I the ride over here was, which was pretty pretty eco itself. We were on a mountain road, and he's showing me charts and research documents across the dashboard of the car, and I'm seeing trees and no guardrail and like a mountainside on the outside of my window, and I'm pretty eco. And he's driving and talking. He's got his sunglasses on. He's got music playing. He's got the top down. I'm white knuckling it, and I'm trying to learn his entire theory on the way down the mountain.
That's BruceLipton.com, easy enough.
Yeah, BruceLipton.com. He wrote a book called The Biology of Belief a couple of years ago, but he's been out there for a long time. In the backwaters, really, of biology, because he did a radical thing. He's a cell researcher, used to be at Stanford, got his butt booted out of there, just like a lot of the popular scientists, like, oh, I don't know, Carl Pribram. Because he made a radical statement. And what he said was, he was teaching straight out of the textbook biology to pre-med students. And it was something that occurred to him in the lab, and then he went and researched the membranes about it. You know, this is he said, everyone learns that the nucleus is the powerhouse, that runs the cell, and you know, all that stuff. And he said, no, it wasn't the genes. It wasn't gene expression. It was not guided by the nucleus. It was guided by the membrane of the cell. Because the membrane is the physical boundary between the internal and the external environment, and it's the signals that get processed on both sides that decides what's going to come out of that cell. And so your communication system is only as good as your membrane. Your membrane actually is a fluid mosaic. Remember that little biology term?
Mm-hmm.
And then he figured out that the receptors on the membrane are picking up environmental signals and conforming and shaping the proteins, and he got into this thing called integral membrane proteins, called IMPs, that are kind of like, you know, almost like this thing here, this router here, that broadcast through the whole cell signals that come in from the environment that have to do with identity and things that are responsible for orienting the cell to its environment. So what happened was he chunked all that up, and he was having sort of an eco experience typing it up, is that the environment is sort of like playing on the outside of the membrane like fingers on a keyboard, right? And then stuff pops up on the display. And he's saying, well, if the environment's doing that to the cell, then the environment's doing that to us as individuals, and then, well, who's the fingers on the keyboard? And he realized, you know, it was the spiritual thing. It was, maybe it's God. And he got into this whole big thing. You can't say God in a biology lab for very long. They lock you up. You go from a white coat to a white coat.
That's right.
One fits and one's a little tight. So he came up with the idea, and this became popular in biology when they studied things like migratory bird patterns, things like that, is that your identity, your individual identity, you, your biological you, is nothing more or less than a frequency. It's an environmental signal out there in the wind right now, like a radio station in Kansas. It's out there, broadcasting live. And you are the only one that has the receptors on your cells to pick up that signal, and you identify yourself as it. So if you take the metaphor of breaking down a radio to find out where the music is, it's the same thing. If you break down a human being, you're not going to find their identity in there. All you're going to find are the receptors.
Huh.
Where's the signal? Out there. So that gets into, wow, if that means that I am a cosmic signal that is being broadcast to this entity here, physically sitting in the chair, that makes proteins that are the literal analog of that figurative signal, then I'm a hologram. But I'm a hologram that breathes, moves, and expresses itself. And that's why the dream world, to an eco, is just as real as the waking world. And that's why the Aborigines have it all, the whole culture is the other way around. They think the dream world is the reality, and this is the fake, transient, disposable stuff that's full of symbols and stuff. So they would take the Jungian model and turn it completely around.
Yeah,
and they would go, you know, and they go into a group dreaming to get information. You know, the Mayans did the same thing. So we've gotten away from the dark side of the wave because it's ooky spooky scary in there because it's abstract. But here you have Freud, you know, late 19th century, and here you got Bruce Lipton, late 20th century, essentially saying the same thing, but one's talking about it's biological. And it has meat on it, like your psyche has meat on it, like Freud's saying.
Uh-huh.
And here's Lipton 100 years later saying your soma has spiritual aspects to it. It's environmental. It cannot be contained by the skin, like we were saying before. So psychosomatic, that whole discipline, 100 years separated, both guys are looking at stuff in the lab to figure that out. So that's why the eco-somatic orientation includes the environment in its processing, where the other ones sort of use the environment to enhance or to lighten up things. So it's like it's almost like a background thing instead of something that's essential. So
yeah.
Here's the number again, 646-478-4847, 643 on an early 4th of July show.
Right.
And,
that's right.
You know, we haven't really gotten into I guess our Philo friend will not be joining us this evening.
You know what? I was just thinking, is that
Oh,
him?
Is that him?
Happy 4th of July.
Oh, my God.
Did you even know we were doing the show early? Because I don't remember telling you.
I figured it out, and then I didn't mark even my message this week to the blog got sent to, it was this morning at 4:49 a.m., got sent to my spam filter. So I'm at a 4th of July party right now, and I just remembered that I thought it was at 6 or 7, so I thought, well, I'll call it 6:30 or so. Maybe I'll catch him in between.
We're glad you're here.
We just did a Bruce Lipton on you. We just paged you from the hyperspace.
That's right.
Yeah, we were talking about how your identity's environmental signal. We wondered if the file was going to join us, and then beep, you are.
That was absolutely beautiful.
That is perfect. Because I just walked outside and I looked at the I looked at the clock. I was like, oh, I better check. I better check in with them and see if we're actually doing this thing.
Yeah, we're doing it, baby.
Yeah. So, how's it going?
It's
well,
going
well. We kind of, another one of those rumbling, bumbling, stumbling shows. Kind of echoed onto the air. I was driving through the raindrops to get here, and we've been talking a lot more about the sort of the conventional distinctions that psychologists make between character, temperament, and
personality
as it relates to the domains. So it's like, what are you really born with, in a sense? And there's a lot of different animals that come out of that zoo, and we're saying the eco is much more sort of content with the openness, with lack of definition, with a broad sense of things, with an abstract connection to their world, than the first two domains that you have, because they're more literal. Philos are extremely literal. I mean, do you want to know if it's meat or cake? Put it in your mouth.
Yeah.
that's the philo way. And that gets into something else, because we got a little time here, because the stages that psychologists come up with, Erickson's got stages that go through your whole life. Freud's got stages for early life. Jung has stages for transcendence and individuality. All these things are ways, way within ways if you look at them, right? Eventually you see it no matter which way you look. But I'm saying that when I was looking at that the other day, I'm like, wow, it's almost like Freud concentrated on early development and said, here's my fractal loop. Is you got the anal stage, oral stage. How does that go? I never get that. I'm 42, and I'm still in the anal stage at 42.
Yes, you are. Let me teach you a little anagram for this. Okay. Freud was a little sexualized, right?
Yeah.
And everything he said, a cigar is sometimes a cigar. Sometimes, you're thinking about being homosexual and so on. Okay. So now we're going to think, a plug. Okay, a plug could be something sexual. Okay, a plug, oral, anal, phallic, latency, genital. A plug.
Oh, a plug.
Wait
a minute. Oral, anal, phallic, latent. What?
Latency,
a plug. I got you.
Genital.
What's UG?
You're doing a mnemonic, not an enneagram.
That's right.
Well, acronym, whatever.
An acronym.
It's an acronym.
Yeah.
Wait, what's the last two?
PLG.
Latency.
Okay. It's
PLG?
Latency.
Okay, what's G?
Genital.
Genital. And when does that kick in?
Genital is adolescence.
Ah, I missed that. Okay.
He's stopped there,
That's what I'm saying.
It's like, adolescence into adulthood is the same difference, which we know it is not.
Well, the brain's changing, too. I mean, those stages we started talking about before that the psychologists sort of think, or this is the consensus is, it takes you about 18 years to completely build a personality.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the consensus of what the current thinking is there. So you can't really have a personality disorder until you've developed one. You can have all these other things. But
So how come they're giving these kids, these 2.5-year-olds, calling them bipolar and giving them psychotropic drugs.
But we didn't say psychiatry made any sense. Psychology is saying it takes 18 years, but the psychiatrist doesn't wait.
What I don't understand, though, they say that, you can diagnose kids with a personality disorder at 18, but they're really finding that adolescence goes into at least the early 20s.
Yeah, well, your adolescent brain isn't done until you're 25.
That's right.
Become
uh-oh.
The. Did we lose him?
We lost our philo.
Chip has left the building. Well, when he comes back to do his tip. But I'm saying that is starting to become sort of the writing reflex for all these maps is that, you say it's this, and that, personality is 18. Now put it onto the biological spectrum of what's happening in a child at the age of 18 developmentally, where's their brain, and we're saying that that's when the second universal transition begins, late adolescence, it starts to turn for home to build an adult brain, so it has to go from separating time from body, which it does at the age of 4, when you get that exo aspect where you can start to conceive a future and remember a past, and from distinct from your physical body here in the present. You can think about Saturday and last week and things like that. And then when you get to 17 to 25, now you start thinking about it in terms of space, of how does this thing separate from my ideas? How do my ideas relate over time? So it's like you start thinking of yourself in different roles and different sexual orientations even. All those things come up between 17 and 25 because you're trying on a lot of different hats because you're telling yourself your life story, which now you're saying is based on the personality you developed, based on the temperament and character you had all along. And we're saying that underneath all of that, the domains are chugging along and giving you signatures and giving you cues to guide you to the most coherent way to express yourself. And then at 25, all that stuff kind of becomes stage one, and that's the platform for your adult life. And then you develop all the habits and tendencies of that are going to be sort of your traveling companions there for the rest of the ride. And there's the maps we see with these stages, you know, that's Freud. Then you see how Jung deals with mostly with midlife crisis and then beyond, which is transcendence. He gets into the spiritual aspect of adulthood. And Erickson,
social, yeah,
pretty much has a conflict for every decade that you,
yep,
have to resolve. And if you don't resolve that conflict, you don't get to go to the next stage.
Well, that's the difference between Freud and Erickson. With Freud, you become fixated. Erickson says you do go to the next stage. You're just a little screwy.
I got booted.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah,
we figured that. That's okay. We're glad you're back.
So on that, I don't know where you guys ended up with that.
Well, you just making a distinction, the time thing. Just recap that last part because it's important for what Jeb was saying about Erickson.
All right. Freud said you would be fixated in a stage if you didn't get past it. For example, you're fixated in the anal stage and so on and so forth. But Erickson said you can go on to the next stage. You're just a little screwy. So you haven't really resolved the conflict well, but you can still go to the next stage.
So you bring your baggage in, so it gets more embedded.
Yeah.
So like if you don't finish that first conflict, the second conflict starts with or without you, and then you've got homework to do on both levels.
Right, but you can go forward, unlike Freud, who said, you know, you're done.
You're stuck there. It's like you can't
fast
go.
You're 90 years old, and you're still stuck in the anal stage. But now you're in diapers, which is pretty appropriate.
Yeah, actually, but the thing is, you got to remember, the life expectancy when these guys were developing their theories wasn't more than 70 years old. You know, they didn't live out their theories. And I just think life was so much different. You didn't interact with more than a couple hundred people. I'm sitting here in Larchmont. I might have never met anyone from Rockland County. You know?
Right.
So it's like now you're a world citizen. You know, my daughter at 11 has probably met more people than I met in my whole life in 11 years as an aunt, though. Because she has a compulsion to introduce herself very formally, very completely. She met the mayor this morning, you know, and started blabbing about my mom and her mom, and it was amazing. And I said, I got to watch her work the room. She worked the entire freaking picnic.
And, well, that's how, you know,
because,
she is.
Yeah.
And she's very
so
cute.
Again, she just, I said, how do you do that? And she goes, now I've got, talk about full circle. You know the Trix Rabbit for Tricks for Kids?
Of course.
Okay, yeah. And one of my eco heroes. An eco hero of mine, among Bugs Bunny.
Yep.
I watched her work away. She was appealing this decision of this race that the boys cheated on. And the mayor was overhearing this thing. And she was doing, we were talking about in the beginning of this BATNA thing. It was the best available, what is it, the best available something, best alternative to a negotiated agreement. That's a BATNA. And so she's in there negotiating with the officials there who were, you know, getting ready for the next race. There's like 22 races going on, you know. So she says it, total anta. She goes, I know you don't have time to discuss it with me right now. I just need to say this so you understand what happened. And they all whipped their heads around. You know. And it was like, and she pointed at the two boys and she said, you know, we raced for 48 yards fairly, and the last 6 feet, they elbowed their way and dove across the finish line. That shouldn't be rewarded. I had to get that in. And the mayor was standing there. It was an amazing, amazing moment. You know, it's like I walked past. I said, "How do you go in and do that?" And she goes, and she says, "Silly eco, tricks are for kids." Right out of the commercial.
Really?
Because an eco would have to think. Yeah, because I would have to think of a joke or some other way to kind of go in a little tangentially. She went in. She knew she wasn't going to win the argument, but she was going to get her point across. And I was also.
She can't understand how you couldn't do that, or, well,
right.
She does because you're eco, but she she understands it intellectually, but in her physiology, they can't understand how you wouldn't do that. Why would you go about it any other way than just go right to it?
Why would you try and trick them? Why would you try to, you know, to do anything? Just go right after them.
Just cut their throat. Just walk right up, cut their throat, and say, now can you breathe?
it was just a lot of pointing. And then, you know, and her partner was a philo, a three-legged race. Anto and a philo was funny to watch. They were practicing, and she's smacking her friend in the back of the head. She's trying to get the rhythm down, the timing down. It's hilarious. So, all right, putting that aside, because I'm looking at the clock and the IM's here.
Let's do it. Time
for the somascopes. We got a couple minutes left. It's an easy one this week because we're shifting, you know, through the Eagle Weekend's this weekend. And if I can pop up my map here while we're talking, and we'll pop up the map. And then we get into a new cycle, and it's time for the exos to come out again, which is always, to me, in the summer, it's sort of like Christmas in July or something like that.
Yeah, it's an oxymoron.
Yeah. I mean, when the exos show up in July, it's usually the worst week of the summer weather-wise. It's usually the worst week. It's like the dog days in August come back, and it's almost always an exo week. So let me just check out the map here if I can find it. Oh, okay, wrong one. And what's going to happen is we're going to go through a couple of different changes. Because, like I said, this week was much more about relaxing and opening up and kind of and enjoying things. We're going from the fourth interface to the fifth interface. So imagine this. Everything next week is going to be about relating. Everything next week is going to be about being able to get across without a lot of righteous indignation or fighting, but really relating. Not the bonding stuff, but getting to past the point of physical interaction. Like we're going to get our relationship to the next level. You know, things are going to deepen emotionally, and the exos are driving the bus. Okay? So, it's nauseating because it's the middle of July, and you're going to have no environmental support, and you're going to have no support from other people, like exos like it. Like I said before, they could ignore all that stuff. So, this is going to be a week going across the board for the philos, the ontos, and the ecos to really, really measure their words. Write your emails slowly, read them twice. When you're leaving a voicemail, watch your tone of voice on those. When you're interacting with people on a small talk level, you know, getting your lotto tickets, watch your personal space philos. Don't get too close. Because the exos do not care about your reaction. It is just like a steel trap. And it's going to be very impersonal and very kind of cutthroat out there next week. On all those three domains, the only ones that are going to be able to function through it, because nothing's going to change for them, is going to be the exos themselves, and they're going to be elusive as hell. If you try to find an exo next week, find a technician, find an air conditioner guy, gone, unavailable, voicemail. Find me if you can. I'm the Pope. So the exos are going to be
this week.
Yes, they're going to be gone. Everyone's gone. All the school officials are gone. Everyone that it's like the government officials are gone. The week of the 4th of July, traditionally, it's sort of a week to just kind of like write off anyway. But that's going to be the theme going through this next week. And we'll talk about it next week when we get into EXO, because we're going to talk a lot about impersonalities. We talk about personalities. Impersonalities will be the theme next week. So with that as the backdrop, we'll send it to Jeb for his tip going out for this week as we wrap up 4th of July.
It's 1 minute, 30 seconds. Give it to us.
Yeah. I would say hunker down, then. That's my tip for the week. Hunker down, and don't look for much support. Inside your own boat this week.
Back of the shed.
That's right.
And a quote from Val as we wind it down here.
Okay, I've got an eco quote for you. A good holiday, and he's referring to a vacation, a good holiday is one spent among people whose notions of time are vaguer than yours. How good is that?
That is actually pretty appropriate, actually.
Yes, it is.
Considering it. And if you're going to do that, make sure that their notions of time are actually broader than yours, that you get there. You don't get there at 5:05 like I did.
Oh, hey, you were close. Look, you know, a couple
Well, I was there. I was downstairs, you know, fumbling with the keys.
That's right.
So, okay, so enjoy your 4th of July festivities tonight, rain or shine, and we'll be back next week to exify you and entertain you here at Naked Summer Riff on this. So for Dr. Jeb up there at his Barbecue and Val and me. This is Naked Soma wishing you nothing but the best and travel light through the darkness. See you next week.
Good evening, everybody.